This is Audible.
Audible Original Publishing presents The Singularity Trap, written by Dennis E. Taylor, performed by Ray Porter.
1. Emissary. One final nudge from the solar wind, and the traveler floated in orbit. Just one of many insignificant pieces of flotsam at this distance from the local star. A voltage through the lines caused its sail to fold into a neat, compact package. The journey from the previous star had taken millennia, but the traveler was incapable of feeling boredom or impatience, nor did it feel anxiety over the many more such hops in its future. The traveler worked through its checklist, shutting down some systems, activating others. Some maintenance would be required. The nearby asteroids would be more than sufficient to supply the raw materials. The traveler scanned the stellar system, looking for planets or moons that matched any of several templates. And almost immediately, success. A blue-green planet with strong spectroscopic lines indicating oxygen, water, and one of the many biological strategies used to harness sunlight. No lights, no radio traffic, but the traveler didn't concern itself. Intelligence would come, or it would not. Either way, the traveler would be long since gone. The traveler launched a drone to the nearest asteroid. Raw materials were mined, maintenance was completed, and an emissary was constructed to wait for the emergence of any intelligent life. The traveler couldn't feel joy or satisfaction. The makers had been very careful to limit its level of sentience. The traveler knew this as a datum, but had no opinion otherwise. Nevertheless, this stop had been successful. Several checkpoint items were marked completed, and other goal trees activated. It was time to move on. A voltage through the anchor lines and the sail unfolded. Slowly, almost imperceptibly, the traveler began its millennia-long journey to the next candidate star. It could wait. 2. Launch.
1 minute to launch.
Ivan gripped the chair arms even tighter. The pain in his fingers penetrated his panic, and he struggled to unclench his hands and slow his breathing. He looked at the arms of his blue coverall, relieved that the cloth was still dry. If he couldn't get a grip soon, the sight of a sopping wet uniform would only encourage the other crew members to more of what they apparently thought was witty commentary. And anyway, his funk made no logical sense. The Sling had been launching shuttles into orbit with no major incidents for almost 40 years. Technically, this was safer than air travel. And he was going into space. This should be fun.
Hey, noob. You aren't gonna have a jammer, are you?
Ivan glanced to his left at Tennyson Davies sitting across the center aisle. Ten, a beefy, florid Texan, was a veteran of asteroid mining, returning for his 10th tour. In fact, every one of the crew signed on with the Mad Astra had at least 4 previous tours with the mining ship. Everyone except himself and Arcadius Geiger. And KD looked like he was falling asleep. Show off. Ivan and his fellow crew members sat together, taking up 2 complete rows. He could see groups from several other ships, all wearing similar utility coveralls, also heading up in preparation for a 6-month mining tour. The coveralls, standard issue items probably made by a single company, were identical, except for the ship insignia on the left breast. The Mad Astra crew wore a stylized image of a hand reaching for a star. Several clunks and a shudder ran through the shuttle, and Ivan renewed his death grip. He half expected to hear a squeal of bending metal from the chair's arms. A faint whiff of flop sweat assaulted his nostrils, and he realized he was again losing the battle with panic.
15 seconds,
the PA intoned. Ivan closed his eyes and tried deep breathing exercises again. Too late to back out now. Even if he unbuckled and ran screaming for the exit, the shuttle would launch on schedule with him plastered to the rear bulkhead. 3 months of training and simulations, which had felt like an adventure of its own, now seemed nothing more than wishful thinking. He was about to be shot into the air in a tin can with no say in his fate. Not even a view of space for the next 15 minutes.
"Relax, noob," said Davies. "We haven't lost a crew member in weeks."
The veteran miner grinned at Ivan, but the expression didn't reach his eyes. He looked more like a cat anticipating a meal than someone offering reassurance. Ivan opened his mouth to retort, but at that moment the sling kicked in. His body was pressed into his seat as the shuttle accelerated down the track. It would continue for the entire 5-kilometer stretch of the launch tunnel, air resistance reduced by massive pumps that pulled the air from in front of the shuttle and pumped it back in behind. The occasional moan floating up the aisle showed that he wasn't the only person having trouble. He tried to extract a small kernel of solace from that shared misery. Thankfully, this part of the takeoff was smooth. Nothing like the old space launches, perched on top of an explosive cylinder of fuel, being rattled so hard you felt your teeth would fall out through your ears. Ivan concentrated on his breathing and on not whimpering in fear. He hadn't been tagged with a nickname yet, and he sure as hell didn't want to provide the crew with that kind of material to work with. Certainly not before he'd even left atmosphere. The shuttle hit the upcurving part of the sling and the acceleration vector changed, now pushing him down in his seat as well as back. The pressure would only last seconds, possibly the longest seconds of his life. As the shuttle left the sling behind, boosters kicked in. Specially tuned microwave emitters heated and rarefied the air in front of the shuttle, reducing air resistance as the vessel clawed its way into the sky. The bump and rattle gradually faded as the shuttle climbed through the atmosphere. After 5 minutes, the boosters shut down, leaving them in free fall. The sudden silence made Ivan wonder for a moment if his hearing had been damaged. Fortunately, Davies provided his own brand of reassurance.
"Hey, looks like the noob survived. Didn't even pee himself, I don't think."
Ivan turned his head to glare at Davies and provide suitable return fire. Big mistake. The hammering he'd just taken during launch, combined with the free-fall conditions, were already playing hell with his beleaguered stomach. Add the insult to his inner ear from an abrupt turn of the head, and with an oop, Ivan grabbed for the barf bag in the pocket in front of him. The retching seemed to go on forever. One of the unfortunate aspects of the human condition was that the acrid odor of vomit tended to induce vomiting. Several more oops sounded through the cabin. There would probably be some eventual abuse for that as well. Finally recovered, his face dripping in sweat, he rolled up the bag and placed it in the receptacle. Turning to Seth Robinson, seated on his right in the middle seat, Ivan said,
"Well, great. I guess I've just earned a nickname."
"No," replied Robinson.
"If we gave out a nickname for puking, most of us would be called Barfy. You've got 2 days to get that under control, noob. If you're still tossing it up come departure day, you'll be scrubbed. You get your money back for your share purchase, less the standard penalty, and we'll be doing a 6-month tour short of body. Clear?"
Ivan nodded, silent. The penalty would wipe out what small equity in his share he'd managed to build. If he washed out, he'd be left with nothing. He glanced at Robinson. Freckled and red-headed, thin and gangly, a good 15 centimeters taller than Ivan, Robinson could pass for a teenager in the right light. It was hard to believe that the man was old enough to hold a spacer certificate. If Robinson could do it, Ivan could damn well do it.
Docking maneuvers start in 30 seconds,
the PA announced. Ivan looked up carefully this time and cursed the lack of windows. He was in space. Granted, asteroid mining wasn't the most glamorous way to get there, but most avenues to space involved military commissions, significant wealth, or some specialty in high demand at the space stations or colonies. The child of climate change refugees who lost everything when the ocean took their home, Ivan's options were strictly limited. He thought of his family, of the dead-end, soul-crushing job that was the best he could get, despite finishing at the top of his computer science graduating class. The bug-infested too small apartment, that was all he and Judy could manage on two salaries. This was their only way out. He would get this done. The pay was better to begin with, and if they hit any kind of significant mineral load? The shuttle jerked as maneuvering thrusters kicked in. The passengers endured several minutes of random accelerations. Fortunately for Ivan's stomach, all low thrust. "This pilot sucks," muttered one of the crew. Ivan craned his neck to look over the seat backs and identified the speaker as Raul Alfaro.
"Belay that, Alfaro," barked another. "You're a guest here."
The rebuke came from Albert Mikorowski, the pilot of the Mad Astra, sitting across the aisle from Alfaro. Pilots stuck together, and one wouldn't tolerate bad-mouthing another's flying. The Astra's co-pilot, Lita Generis, added her glare for emphasis. Before Alfaro could respond, a clunk resounded through the walls as the shuttle docked. Again, Ivan wished for windows. He might as well be on Earth, in yet another simulator for all the actual adventure he was getting. They had just docked at Olympus Station, the hub for space travel anywhere in the system. The enormous, double habitation rings, a full kilometer in diameter, formed the most well-known and iconic image in the civilized world. The view during the approach must have been spectacular.
"There are lots of windows on the station, noob," Robinson said, seeming to read his mind. "You can spend the next 2 days watching shuttles and ships come and go. As long as you pass the pre-flight, your time is your own. Once we've met with the captain for the standard benediction. Star Lounge, half an hour. You know where that is?" Ivan responded with a small shake of his head.
"Noobs," Robinson rolled his eyes. "Just stick with me when we get into the station. You can handle free fall, I hope."
Astronomical. The word didn't apply to just stars and planets. Ivan scanned the drink menu and felt his eyebrows climb his forehead. He'd had steaks that cost less. Real steaks. Davies, sitting across from him, laughed.
"Yeah, noob. Just one of many things you have to get used to. But not to worry. The locally produced stuff is much cheaper."
"And where would I find that?" Ivan asked, waving the menu.
"Well, not here. The working stiff bars don't come with the fancy view."
Davies waved a hand at the large window a few tables over. The stars, visible in the low lighting, would take just over a minute to complete a rotation.
"Or the nice, comfy gravity."
He smiled at Ivan, the expression still lacking any trace of friendliness.
"You might want to practice a little more with low G before you visit up Axis, noob."
The waiter returned with the drinks, a tequila shot for each crew member. He set the glasses down, but no one reached for theirs. There was likely a tradition of some sort in play. Ivan watched Robinson seated beside him for cues. Captain Andrew Jennings at one end of the long table stood up. Tall, gray-haired, and spare of build, he was every inch the lifetime spacer. A buzz-cut and thick mustache gave him the aura of a movie cowboy, yet somehow he still managed to make the standard utility coveralls look like a uniform.
"Gentlemen and ladies,"
he paused to scan the table, pointedly looking at each person, perhaps memorizing their faces,
We have lucked out and managed to get a relatively unexplored section of the belt in this tour's stakes lottery. Things haven't gone particularly shiny the last couple of trips, and we've had to say goodbye to some of our crew. I'd like to welcome our newest members, Ivan Pritchard and Arcadius Geiger. The captain gestured toward Ivan and the other new member. Arcadius is a veteran spacer, having crewed with the Forward Motion and the Serene Starlight on several occasions. Geiger nodded to the table in general and muttered something noncommittal in a slight German accent. Gesturing toward Ivan, the captain continued. Ivan is a first-timer, but is also a top-rated computer specialist, so we're looking forward to perhaps a little less drama with setting up the mining robot AIs this time around. Several of the crew whooped and clapped their hands. Ivan grinned and bobbed his head, embarrassed by the sudden attention. As you know, it takes only one good strike to set you up for life. It's why we do this. Well, that, and the luxurious lifestyle. The captain flashed a tight smile to general laughter. He raised his glass and everyone at the table stood, shooters in hand. To the Mad Astra and her crew, and may this tour be our big score. The crew members raised their drinks and tossed them back in unison.
Ah, woof, tequila shooter. Not used to those.
Ivan's eyes watered, and he put every ounce of willpower available into the task of not coughing as he sat down. He turned to find Robinson watching him with an amused smile.
Not used to tequila, Sprout?
Ivan blew out a breath.
I'm more of a whiskey drinker.
Captain buys the first drink, Davies said, leaning forward. But after that, we're on our own. Sprout.
Ivan's eyes widened as he realized he'd just acquired a nickname. He turned to glare at Robinson. Robinson shrugged and grinned.
Sorry.
The captain picked that moment to stand again and address the crew.
I know this isn't your venue of choice, people. I admit to a certain sympathy. The prices would get you an entire meal at other establishments. So, I will leave you to enjoy your remaining liberty. I'll see you all, I hope, on the Mad Astra in 2 days' time.
The crew stood, and with a final nod, the captain turned and left. Robinson poked Ivan with an elbow.
Let's go get our gear and get settled in. We'll see about some entertainment later.
Ivan nodded to Davies, who favored him with a blank look, and followed Robinson out. The transient accommodations on Olympus Station were clean, efficient, and tiny beyond belief. This style had been around in Japan since the 20th century, and it was ideal for overnights. Ivan eyed his bunk, literally a square tube running straight into the wall, perhaps twice shoulders width. It consisted of a thin mattress, some slide-open storage cupboards on the walls, and a pull-down locking hatch at the front for privacy and security. The compartments were stacked 3 levels deep, with a narrow ladder running between the stacks to access the upper bunks. Low-intensity lighting 24/7, combined with muted autumn colors, encouraged sleep and discouraged socializing. Shared bathroom facilities at floor level completed the offering. It was clean, at least. The slightest whiff of disinfectant indicated that cleaning staff was on the ball. The restrooms looked well-maintained, and the paint on the walls, if not exactly bright, was at least not peeling. No rust, of course. Corrosion on a space station could be fatal. No doubt inspection and maintenance would be draconian in its thoroughness. The Burrows, the place was called. As a junior crew member, he found himself stuck on the top row. In the one-quarter G of level 17, it wasn't an onerous climb, but inconvenient if you needed to use the facilities in the middle of the night. Ivan sighed, draped his backpack over his shoulder, and climbed the narrow ladder.
After easing himself in, he distributed his possessions into the appropriate cubbies, pulled down the door, and closed his eyes for a moment. Ivan jerked awake, startled by the banging on his hatch.
"You alive, Sprout? Do we have to order ourselves a replacement noob?"
Blinking the fog from his eyes, Ivan looked at his watch. He'd been asleep for more than 2 hours. He turned on his bunk and pushed the hatch up to see Davies, hanging from the side ladder by one hand and still grinning. That grin was going to get old really fast.
"Come on, Sprout, we're going up to Callahan's. This is a good chance for you to look around while we protect your virginal butt."
"Should I be doing that? This early?" "You said yourself..."
"You have to start somewhere,"
Robinson yelled from the floor below. Ivan bobbed his head in acknowledgement and began pulling himself out. Davies moved down the ladder to get out of his way. At the bottom, Ivan found Davies and Robinson, the other new guy, Arcadius Geiger, Cyrilla Heinrichs, the geologist, and Aspasia Nevin, the scooter pilot.
"This looks serious," he said, looking around.
"Only the drinking,"
Nevin answered, favoring him with a scowl that Ivan was beginning to realize was her default expression. Without waiting for consensus, she turned and headed for the exit from the burrows. For someone so short, Aspasia covered a lot of ground in a very short time, and gave the impression that she was more inclined to go through people rather than around. Geiger and Heinrichs followed, Cyrilla snickering at a muttered comment from Katie. Robinson slapped him on the shoulder as they brought up the rear.
"We're going to be on the Astra for 6 months, kid. Best to satisfy your inner delinquent before departure."
The Burrows was close to one of the elevators that ran through the wheel from the rim to the hub. They entered, and Ivan scanned the panel. 30 levels made up the wheel, each button labeled with both a floor number and the gravity value at that level. Davies pressed button 27, the doors closed, and the elevator began to rise. Ivan staggered a little as the entire car seemed to shift. Robinson put out a steadying hand and chuckled.
"The car swivels to keep down toward the floor despite Coriolis forces. You'll get used to it."
Callahan's didn't fit the stereotype. All the vid shows suggested that a spacer bar would be dark, smoky, filled with shady characters doing shady deals in the corners. The reality was clean, well-lit, with lots of tables and several vids showing various sports and news channels. Ordinary people sat around drinking and talking. It could be any bar on Earth, except for the 10th G gravity and the preponderance of mining crew coveralls as a fashion statement. That and the visible curvature of the floor. Ivan looked around.
"No windows?"
"Windows cost money, noob. The engineering, design, and materials costs of putting a potential weak point into the hull jack up the price of the real estate. This is the low-rent area."
Davies motioned to an empty table.
"And the choices for alcohol are limited since everything is synthesized space-side. Not a whole lot of blue agave being grown up here."
They sat, Ivan and Seth on one side, Cyrilla and Katie opposite, with Ten and Aspasia each getting a side to themselves. The waiter approached and Seth ordered the first round.
"Synthol shots and a juice for the Sprout."
Everyone grinned at Ivan. The waiter left without comment.
"Why do I feel like I'm being set up for something?"
Ivan looked around the table.
"No real secret, Ivan," Katie said. "Your first drink of liquid in low G can be, entertaining."
The drinks arrived, with a yellowish juice for Ivan.
"What is it? Just generic juice?"
The waiter returned a tight smile.
"It's whatever is currently being made, and quite often it's bland. Today it's orange juice."
Ivan raised his eyebrows in an expression of resignation and raised his glass.
"To me, squirting this out my nose." He knocked back the glass of juice to the surprised chuckles of his crewmates.
There were several moments of expectant silence before Ivan explained.
We did all kinds of low-G simulations at the training academy. I've already done all my squirting.
Groans of disappointment sounded around the table, and Seth motioned to the waiter for a proper drink for Ivan. The drink, when it arrived, smelled more like something you'd use to disinfect a wound. Ivan could feel the look of disbelief written on his face as his nostrils attempted to pucker. The poorly suppressed snickers from his crewmates confirmed his impression.
"That, noob, is synthol."
Davies grinned his usual smug grin.
"They tend to make it a little overproof. Bottoms up."
"If I drink this, can I get something non-lethal next?"
Seth laughed. "The whiskey-like substance actually isn't half bad. Let's get this over with, okay?" Ivan raised his glass and knocked it back. It took everything he had to avoid spitting it all over his table mates. He found himself remembering the tequila shot with fondness. Some infinite time later, he had forced the liquid down his throat and the various abused internal organs had stopped protesting. He scrubbed his face with his hands and said,
"Not melted off. I don't suppose I could get some juice."
Seth turned to Davies.
"I don't think you're going to take him down without getting out-and-out abusive. What say we move on to the serious business of drinking?"
Davies shrugged at Seth, gave Ivan something that he supposed he could interpret as a smile, and signaled for the waiter.
"So,"
Aspasia said,
"you're a computer guy. That's good."
"Because I can help set up the robots more quickly?" Ivan cocked his head.
"No, because Lorenzo will kill you instead of us."
"You know," Ivan replied, "I'm beginning to think I've signed up with the IMM Psychos R Us. Is everyone in this crew a homicidal maniac?" Aspasia guffawed.
"Just Lorenzo. Ten over there isn't a psycho, just a jerk."
"My adoring fans."
Davies winked at her. Heinrichs laughed, and Ivan saw Geiger twitch. He sympathized. Cirilla's laugh had a certain nails-on-chalkboard quality, and Katie was sitting right beside her. Hopefully she wasn't the jolly type. There was a moment of silence, then Seth sighed and spread his hands in a pleading motion.
"We're all a bit on edge, Ivan. I'm guessing you bought into the Mad Astra because a share was cheaper than any of the other mining ships advertising for crew, right? Did you wonder why?"
Ivan shook his head.
"My wife is an actuary, Seth. I know the Astra is having financial difficulties. The thing is, we didn't have a choice. We'd have had to wait at least another cycle to be able to afford a full-price share. We're taking a chance, but Judy likes the odds. Honestly, she says the Astra's share is discounted more than the numbers would support."
Eyebrows went up and a few of the crew looked at each other. Davies gave Ivan an appraising look.
"Well, okay then."
Ten bought the next round, synthetic whiskey this time, and raised his shot glass.
"To Ivan's wife. Here's hoping she's right."
Ivan grinned at the unexpected tribute. He downed the shot and smacked the glass to the table.
"Not bad.
Not terrible, anyway. You could get used to it." Things got a little blurry after that. The promenade that ran around the first level of the public wheel was always busy, with pedestrian traffic flowing in both directions. Automated shuttles ran in a roadway below the promenade level and could be boarded at periodic taxi stations. The promenade levels of the two habitation wheels were the crown jewels of Olympus Station, and a popular tourist destination. Expensive restaurants, exclusive shops, and art galleries all tastefully announced themselves, trying to entice the wealthy tourists to come in and spend their money. Two hotels, both five-star, each serviced one of the wheels. In the open areas between businesses, the architects had placed public seating areas, carefully designed to give an illusion of privacy, They allowed the weary traveler to take a break while admiring the view through the enormous, transparent aluminum viewports. Decorative ferns and less identifiable plants separated the seating into small, intimate groupings. There was no problem with budgets for windows on this level, and, more important, these open areas didn't require you to buy something in order to sit. Ivan stared out, enraptured, as various ships ponderously floated into and out of docking bays up on the hub. He found himself amazed at the variety of vessels, from ancient clunkers that couldn't possibly be spaceworthy to the newest, shiniest Benz Gilmore high-end models. No military craft, though. The Navy ships all docked at the other end of Olympus Station's double-wheeled hub. He would have loved to see some of those, but he would need a security clearance to get through the hub access point. Other people came and went. They seemed to belong to three general groups. The passengers and tourists were easy to spot. With few exceptions, their clothing and accessories all screamed money. Next were the station staff. Their clothing, while tasteful and of good quality, was deliberately designed to be a step down. "I'm an employee," it said, "but of good class." Then there was Ivan's group. Ship's crew, characterized by either the blue travel coveralls or occasional shipboard T-shirts and shorts. He hadn't quite figured out where the Navy brass and ship's officers fit into this hierarchy.
"Hey, Sprout, what's doing?"
Ivan turned and looked up to see Seth Robinson approaching. Despite having inadvertently given Ivan his now thoroughly glued-on nickname, Seth seemed to be a decent sort, engaging in only the minimum amount of hazing required to get by. Ivan waved a hand at the window.
"Enjoying the view."
Seth nodded as he sat, moving carefully. "Head hurt?" Seth smiled but ignored the question.
"I make sure to come here every time I pass through the station. For most of the tour, space just looks like metal walls painted in pastel colors. If you ignore the gravity and the curved deck, you could be on Earth. This," Seth waved at the window, "is the stuff that makes it real."
They watched in silence for a few minutes. Ivan was okay with the quiet. If cornered, he would admit that his head hurt as well. He wanted to ask how much they'd drunk the night before, but couldn't get up the nerve. A gasp from some onlookers made Ivan sit up straight. As people pointed, Seth commented,
"SSE frigate. Wow, did not expect to see one of those here."
Ivan nodded slowly, all his attention focused on taking in every detail. The Sino-Soviet Empire military vessel displayed the typical SSE design philosophy: heavy armor, massive weapon emplacements, and no concession to aesthetics. The dull gray finish only showed a clear profile in direct sunlight. Passers-by were stopping and gathering at the view windows as the behemoth slowly moved past, heading for a docking beacon. Ivan could hear muttered questions and complaints. Relations between the Sino-Soviet Empire and the United Earth Nations government were frosty at best and adversarial the rest of the time. While it was unlikely any SSE personnel would actually be at liberty in Olympus Station, even the possibility created a significant level of public tension. Within a minute, the ship had drifted out of sight and the crowd began to disperse, to occasional loud commentary about unwelcome visitors. Seth and Ivan settled back in their seats, both enjoying the changing view as ships continued to move in and out. After a few minutes, Seth broke the silence.
"So what's your story?"
"Hey?
Why asteroid mining? Lost at love, adventure, money, joining the Foreign Legion, fleeing the law."
Ivan looked at Seth, frowning.
"What? You'd get stopped at customs."
"I was kidding about the last one."
"Ah." Ivan was silent for a moment.
"Money. You know what it's like."
Seth nodded.
"Yeah. Good old reality. More people, fewer jobs, fewer resources. Less and less room.
What about you?
The same, mostly. It's the most common reason for being up here. Of course, if you like it and can make an adventure out of the whole thing, that's a bonus. I think I fit in that category. Ivan realized that he and Seth were going through the too casual probing for common attitudes and opinions, the cautious circling of two people who might end up being friends. Well, a friend was never a bad thing to have. I have a family to support, so the adventure angle isn't really on my radar.
That's too bad.
How do you mean?
Ivan turned to Seth, frowning.
The family. I don't have one. My pay goes straight into my bank account. A little spending between tours or on Olympus Station doesn't make much of a dent, and you can't do much with your money on board unless you play poker.
You're inviting me to a poker game? I guess you guys are all terrible, but you're willing to learn from me.
Ivan tried to keep the sarcasm from dripping too heavily.
Me? Hell no. I'm warning you off. Do not get involved in 10 Davies' poker games. Those guys are sharks. The regulars are about evenly matched, so the money really just sloshes back and forth most of the time. But a fresh piece of chum like you? They'll strip you to the bone, and they won't feel the slightest bit bad about it either.
Ivan grinned. Noted, and thanks.
Do you play?
I did.
Once. Lost half my pay from my first tour. Since then, I've made it my mission to steer people clear.
Ivan looked around as a growl escaped his midsection.
Is there food around here that won't cost me a month's wages?
There's a sandwich place, Spinward, a half segment. They use Veet, but their stuff's not terrible. I could eat, too.
Well, that grown meat was becoming common on Earth. Given the cost of boosting the real stuff up, it would be even more popular on the station.
Ivan took one last look at the giant ships, sighed, and followed Seth.
3. Financial concerns. Captain Jennings looked up from the tablet in his hand. Lita Janaris sat at her station, working through pre-departure diagnostics and carefully not looking his way. Her dark skin made her profile indistinct in the low lighting of the bridge. The other stations, all of which collectively formed a semicircle with the captain's chair as the focus, sat empty, awaiting the arrival of the rest of the bridge crew. Jennings took the opportunity to engage in a moment of weakness, rubbing his forehead. He looked up and admired the low glow of the overhead status monitors, readouts showing a healthy, well-prepared ship, ready to go out to chase dreams. Since the ship was at station keeping with the habitation ring spun up, they were in the Hab Ring Bridge. The half-G gravity, normally an experience verging on luxury, wasn't enough today to break his negative mood. He waggled the tablet in his hand. It wasn't going to get any better if he just kept staring at it.
These are final figures, Ms. Janaris?
Janaris turned to him and nodded. Like most spacers, she kept her hair in a short helmet cut. Her tight curls were beginning to show gray around the temples, which seemed incongruous next to her unlined, youthful face.
Yes, sir. All numbers confirmed. The last trip was just one insult too many to the budget. Failing some kind of score, this tour will probably be our last.
Jennings sat back and stared up at the bulkhead between the monitors and bridge stations.
By which you mean, I assume, that our creditors will call in our debts?
Almost certain, sir. The debenture agreement is pretty clear about when the foreclosure clauses come into effect.
How far ahead do we have to come out in order to avoid that?
Barely more than break even, really. We're just below the clause triggers right now.
And statistically, profitable tours should happen about 1 in 3. We've certainly had 2 very bad ones. We're due.
You know it doesn't work that way, sir.
Jennings met her eyes with a small smile.
No,
but leave me my illusions for the moment, okay? None of this was really a surprise. Decades of experience crewing and then commanding a mining ship had given Jennings a good feel for net returns from a tour. He'd known before they even reached Earth that the last one was a bust, but the audited figures removed any possibility of a reprieve. He truly enjoyed captaining a space vessel, but the financial and administrative sides of the job could be soul-sucking. For 25 years, he'd been commanding his own ship. His first command had used the old ion engines, but this was the closest he'd come in all that time to losing it all. It was an uncertain living, of course. A moderately good strike could keep you going for multiple tours. About a third of the tours earned enough to allow you to break even or come out ahead. It took a string of bad luck, running in the red for several tours in a row, to break you. You'd burn through your reserves, then bet everything you had left on that last throw of the dice. And always that dream of the big one, the strike that would take the worries away forever. Jennings imagined the dice cupped in one of his hands. He stared into infinity for several seconds. He was too old to start over. If they took the Astra, he'd be done. There had to be options. There were always options. When is bridge staff getting here, Ms. Janaris?
They start coming in on the next ferry, sir. They should all be on board by 1200. Dr. Kemp has a couple of physicals to complete, so he'll be last in.
Jennings nodded.
Leave a message with each, please. Status meeting at 1500. They'll have time to stow their gear and get cleaned up. I think we have to deal with the financial situation as a priority. Tell them to bring their best ideas.
4. Departure. And again, no windows. Ivan was beginning to despair of ever getting a view of the action. Whoever was in charge of designing spaceships didn't seem to get it. The small vessel was filled to capacity with the Mad Astra's crew. The bridge staff were already on board the Astra, doing whatever startup preparations real astronauts did. Where the space shuttle had been a polished, finished vessel designed with tasteful decor, the ferries that operated around Olympus Station had more of a welded-together go-kart feel. Seats were reminiscent of beach chairs and bare metal dominated. Docking fees being what they were, the captain of the Mad Astra had opted for a parking beacon at a prescribed distance from Olympus Station. The money saved more than made up for the cost of the ferry hired to transport personnel. Seth replied to Ivan's muttered complaint.
You'll get a better view on the Astra. Shuttles and ferries are built as utilitarian as possible. On long-haul ships, we have to be a lot more aware of human psychological needs.
Say, you seem to know a lot about it. Are you the ship's shrink or something?
Seth laughed. Sure, yeah, that's me. That's why I get paid the big bucks.
He settled more comfortably into his seat.
We have a lot of spare time on the ship. I always bring up a few pets of reading and other media. I can lend you some if you run out of porn.
Ivan chuckled, then thought of the sticks in his luggage. Stuffed to the last petabyte with correspondence courses and reference materials in computer science, astronomy, and physics. He was relieved to know he wouldn't be odd man out.
Thanks. I did bring some educational stuff. I'm taking courses, and I'm looking forward to some chunks of free time.
Tennyson Davies stuck his head over the back of his chair.
Just don't forget you're on hydroponics duty on the way out, Sprout. Me and the boys, we like our grub.
Thanks, Tex. I'll be sure to corral something for you. Seth laughed out loud, and several of Tennyson's friends snickered. Tennyson turned red and looked for a moment as if he would take umbrage. Then he grinned at Ivan.
Touché, Sprout. You just tend those plants real good, you hear?
Seth nudged Ivan with an elbow.
Hey, why don't you ask Ten... Who is the only crew member that has managed to ruin prepackaged meals?
There were more laughs, and Seth continued.
Who knows what would happen if we let him near the hydroponics? Tennyson made a show of silently laughing at Seth before sitting down.
Maneuvering, 15 seconds.
At the announcement, everyone settled back into their acceleration chairs and made sure they were buckled in properly. They endured the usual several minutes of thrusts and switches, then a final clunk. The PA crackled to life.
Docking complete. On behalf of Captain Crash and the surviving crew, thank you for flying Mad Dog Airways. Any chickens on board remain the property of the airline. Don't trip over the drunk guy on your way out. Have a good flight.
Ivan and Seth laughed, and Seth said, "Yeah, flying ferries gets a little boring, I guess." Ivan watched the monitor as Olympus Station slowly receded. The Mad Astra accelerated at only 1/10 G, but it could keep up the thrust for hours. During acceleration, the crew would have gravity along the ship's axis and would stick to the on-axis accommodations. According to the captain's announcement, they would accelerate for 4 hours, then would shut down the engines and spin up the ship's hab ring, coasting most of the way to their destination. The trip would take about 3 weeks. Meanwhile, the crew was congregated in the on-axis common room. Aligned with the ship's acceleration vector, the room allowed them to operate in artificial gravity, albeit the much lower 10th G. It featured the same amenities as the Habring common room. Coffee and other drink dispensers, auto washer, food packs and heating unit, and bench tables to sit at. As with all rooms in the ship, the ceiling was painted in a lighter color than the carpet on the floor to create a psychological impression of up and down. Dante Aiello, the first mate, walked in. His stride, in the negligible gravity, resembled the gait from a dream sequence where one step covers 20 feet. Aiello, a doughy-faced middle-aged man, always seemed to wear a slightly surprised expression, as if the normal workings of the universe mystified him. He looked around, his lips moving in a not-quite-silent count. Satisfied that everyone was present, he began poking at his tablet.
"Okay, assignments. Pritchard, Geiger, Todd. You're on cargo inspection. Haul ass, we got limited time before spin-up."
Ivan and the two others jumped up. Ivan jumped too hard and had to do a push-down off the ceiling, to everyone's amusement, and headed for the cargo bay. As they left the room, Ivan could hear Aiello continuing to hand out jobs. Several days later, the pace of work hadn't slackened. Today, Ivan had enjoyed a slightly more technical set of tasks as the crew unshipped the mining robots and put them through diagnostics and setup. Today's shift had been especially backbreaking for those not used to detail work. Unpacking and test assembling the mining robots was a finicky, picky duty that required you to hold a cramped position while making minute adjustments using toy-sized tools. Good work for elves or pixies. A backward lean made Seth grunt as a vertebra audibly popped. Working his shoulders again, he uttered a satisfied sigh as he verified that he'd successfully self-chiropracted. Ivan shuddered theatrically.
"Geez, Seth, that makes me cringe."
"Sorry. I've got a thing in my back that acts up. Lorenza and her stupid mining robots."
"Quit your belly aching," Tan interjected. "I've done tours where some of the robots weren't working and we had to do things manually. A little screwdriver work is nothing."
Davies seemed to be sparing Ivan, at least for today. Maybe it was because of Ivan's work on the robots. A normally 2 to 3 day job had been reduced to barely 4 hours. By the end of the process, Lorenza had almost completely stopped complaining about the shortcomings of the help. Ivan grinned. It definitely felt good to be the hero.
"I am going to sleep like a babe tonight," he said as they dried off from their showers and dressed. "You aren't all tweaked about the size of the accommodations?"
Ivan looked askance at Davies. "Is that a thing? Because after the burrows, this is luxury." Ten laughed.
"Yeah, well, we've had a few claustrophobia cases. The problem is you wake up in the middle of the night, in the dark, in low gravity,
with walls close around you, and you're liable to go into a funk before your brain is caught up. Then you scream in panic, wake the rest of us, and we have to come over and show our appreciation.
He looked at Ivan significantly.
Do I make myself clear?
Don't yell at night. Got it. Ivan grinned back at the much larger man. A couple of the other crew overheard and laughed. Davies gave him an arch look, but no follow-up. Definitely taking it easy today.
Crew to the common room. Meeting at 1320.
Everyone looked up at the PA announcement.
That's, unusual. Well, let's hop to it.
Seth tossed his towel in the laundry basket, followed by the other crew. The laundry mech grabbed the towels as they landed, glaring at each crew member in apparent reproach. Aspasia tossed her towel directly at the mech and grinned at the silent rebuke. They all pulled on the standard ship garb, t-shirt, shorts, and slippers, and headed downwheel to the common room. The hab ring on the Mad Astra was considerably smaller than a space station wheel, barely 100 meters diameter at the rim. This made the curve of the floor, even on the outermost level, far more obvious, and Coriolis force more of an issue. And heading downwheel increased their weight significantly, as their pace added to their rotational velocity. Several of the crew started to sound out of breath as they hustled along. Seth looked back.
Say, some of you guys need to spend more time on the treadmills, I think.
Eat me, Ten snarled. Seth laughed as they arrived at the common room. They shuffled in, grabbed coffees from the ever-primed coffee dispenser, and sat down. Precisely on time, the captain walked in. He scanned the room and nodded.
I want to talk strategy. As captain, of course, I can make unilateral decisions, but I'd prefer to have everyone involved.
He looked around for a moment, inviting questions or comments. No one made a sound.
The last couple of tours have not been good to us, and we've not achieved break-even. If we fall short this time, I'm afraid it will be the last trip for the Mad Astra, at least under my command. All we need is a little more than break-even. I am therefore asking you to approve a potential tour extension of 1 to 3 months. I know it's a hard thing. You'll effectively be working for free for the extra time. However, if we return empty-handed and the creditors foreclose, you will get back at most a fraction of your share purchase. I will leave you to discuss and ponder, and we will have a vote in a week. Thank you for your time.
The captain looked around again, nodded to the crew in general, and walked out. A buzz of conversation immediately rose in the room. Ivan hung his head, balled his fists, and fought back tears.
"Hey, Ivan, what gives?"
Seth asked. Ivan rubbed his eyes with the palms of his hands before answering.
"It means I'm effectively making less per month than I was in my previous job. This was supposed to be a step up, not down. And there's still the chance of losing the share price in the end."
"Yeah. Trying to provide for a family puts a whole other level of difficulty into the equation. Look, kid, I already mentioned my money just goes into the bank. I can give you a loan against either your share if you sell out or future profits if we hit it. No interest, no obligations otherwise."
Ivan felt himself tearing up again, but got it under control.
"Thanks, Seth. I appreciate it. And I don't have the luxury of being too proud to accept."
He noticed out of the corner of his eye that Ten had overheard at least part of the exchange. The normally acerbic crewman didn't comment, though. He met Ivan's gaze for a moment, then looked away. Ivan frowned. It seemed out of character for Ten to have passed on an easy setup like that. Perhaps there was more there than just a loudmouth. Ivan kicked himself expertly up the axial passageway. It was a matter of pride that he could now go from engineering all the way to the hab ring entry without touching the sides. He glided slowly past the various exits, shortcuts to different zero-G areas of the ship. The Mad Astra was generally egg-shaped, 150 meters long, with the fusion nacelles clustered around the narrow end and the hab ring forming a 5-meter-wide cross-section at the widest part of the oval. While spun up, the ring could only be accessed from the corridor that ran down the center of the ship from engineering to the on-axis bridge. Though inconvenient from a purely engineering point of view, the artificial gravity that the hab ring provided was essential to human health on long voyages. Ivan arrived at the hab ring hatch just as he came within reach of the wall. Another perfect trajectory. Grabbing a handhold, he pulled himself to a smooth stop. He exited through the hatch, feet first, to the walkway encircling the hub, and pulled himself around to the nearest spoke ladder. A quick slide down, and he was in the common room. Seth waved from a table where he, Ten, and Dr. Kemp were sitting. Ivan no longer felt any surprise at the doctor's presence. Though nominally an officer, Charles Kemp spent a considerable amount of time mingling with the crew. He claimed the coffee was better.
"We'll begin decelerating in 2 hours, Sprout. Pretty soon you won't be a virgin."
Ivan grinned at Ten as he headed for the coffee machine. "Assuming we find something worth poking with a stick, of course." Dr. Kemp gave Ivan the stink eye.
"There's attitude for you. Anyway, Lita told me they've already tagged several good targets for investigation, within EVA distance of our projected parking location. We've got 3 weeks of prospecting lined up for our first stop."
Everyone looked up as the PA crackled.
"Habring, spin down in 10. Please vacate the Habring."
Ivan's sigh was echoed by several others. The half-G in the Habring was a luxury that would be missed until they arrived at a location where it was worthwhile spinning back up. He looked down at the still empty coffee cup he was holding, then handed it to the dishwasher. The mech snatched the cup, gave it a quick wipe, and returned it to the rack, then glared at Ivan until he retreated. Spin down took a half hour, and for the crew it consisted of nothing more than listening to the Mad Astra make odd groaning sounds. To Ivan's ear, it sounded like the ship was being slowly torn apart. However, none of the other crew were reacting, so he did his best to look relaxed and unconcerned as well. Shortly after the noises died away, the PA announced,
"Spin down complete. Prepare for turnover."
Shuffling sounds accompanied a general checking of buckles and seating positions. Seth looked over at Ivan and smirked.
"Here's hoping your stomach is thoroughly acclimated. You might want to hold on to a barf bag, just for kicks."
Seth was right. This was the last test for a noob. The Astra would have to reverse her orientation in order to use the engines to decelerate. The maneuver wasn't especially dangerous or difficult with the hab ring spun down, but required the crew to be strapped in for the duration. During the maneuver, the slow rotation of the entire ship in an unaccustomed direction generally left people with a slight, undefined queasiness. And the protracted duration of the event sometimes produced a surprise reaction in stomachs that had no experience with it. Ivan compared the symptoms to a low-grade seasickness, but managed to avoid any need for the barf bag.
"Deceleration begins. 15 seconds.
This announcement brought sighs and smiles from the crew. They would have 1/10 G during deceleration, then would spin up the hab ring once they arrived at their target location. The engines fired up, decelerating the ship to slip into an orbit consistent with the asteroid belt objects in the area. In 4 hours, the Mad Astra matched the average orbital velocity for objects at this distance from the sun. The hab ring would be spun up next, but there were also jobs to do, and no reason to sit around waiting. The crew gathered in the on-axis lounge, awaiting orders from the bridge. With no thrust, they were in zero-G, but it still beat being strapped into an acceleration couch for hours. Ivan settled himself onto a bench and locked his legs underneath to anchor himself. Several crewmates joined him at his table, but no one attempted conversation. Everyone just wanted this part to be over as soon as possible. In short order, the intercom blared forth Dante's voice.
Crew, prepare for spin-up 10 minutes. Pritchard Robinson, beacon deployment, hop to it.
The two men straightened up, taking care to not go floating